Welcome to Jury Duty. I'm your host, Chris Terracone. Season 8 of Jury Duty explores the trial of Alex Murdoch, a member of one of the most powerful families in South Carolina, who is accused of murdering his son Paul and his wife Maggie, with the purpose of covering up a multitude of alleged crimes, including fraud and homicide. In our last episode, we began our look at the cross-examination of forensic pathologist Dr. Ellen Reamer. In this installment, we continue our review of Dr. Reamer's testimony. That's all coming up right after the break.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
It is the morning of February 14th, 2023, day 15 of the trial of Alex Murdoch. As we concluded our last episode, SLED forensic pathologist Ellen Reamer testified about a series of x-rays under cross-examination by defense attorney Dick Harpootlian. Dr. Reamer explained to the jury how shotgun pellets moved through Paul Murdoch's body, specifically around his neck and head area. As we begin this installment, Harpootlian continues his questioning of the witness by asking her about the recovery of pellets from within the victim's body during the autopsy. Defense attorney Philip Barber stands in front of the jury, and Dr. Reamer again uses Barber's body to demonstrate her explanation.
Okay, so there's an exhibit that was shown to you by Mr. Waters of some pellets that you
yes.
recovered. But that's not all the pellets you recovered.
That's all the pellets I recovered. I don't stay for days to recover each pellet. It's actually a lot harder than it looks. Here they look like you know exactly where they are, but you know, you can fish for like an hour to find one pellet. It's fairly small and there's a lot of tissue, and
so I get
a handful of them and that's sufficient.
Did you keep the buckshot separate from the birdshot? Because this is birdshot.
I don't think any of it was actually buckshot. Buckshot is very large. So they were all collected together.
Okay, so you thought they were all birdshot?
No, I didn't make that conclusion. They're some kind of shot. I didn't make a determination.
So you didn't determine the...
Yeah, that's really the firearms. I'm the pathologist. It's the firearms expert to determine what kind of shot.
So...
I said shotgun pellets, and that's
right.
Sufficient.
If previous expert testimony was the chest was a buckshot and the head was duck shot or some sort of bird shot, you're not going to disagree with that.
I really didn't. It all looked similar to me.
Okay, let me see.
Harpootlian puts another x-ray image on the screen. Like many of the more graphic photographs presented to the jury, these images are shielded from the public eye.
Exhibit 111, please. Let's start with the lower left of this. Lower right there, okay?
Yeah.
This is the total picture. And so what does this represent?
We can see his upper and lower teeth here. Upper teeth, the lower teeth, and so he actually did not have any fractures of his teeth. So the projectiles were going behind the teeth. His teeth were not all fractured out.
So we can show on Mr. Barber where these pellets would have been.
This is just a two-dimensional image. So they're anywhere between, like, you know, here and here. It's hard to say based on a two-dimensional image.
Okay, and I think, show us where you think the exit wound was.
Right side of the
top. The back of his head.
The top of his head.
The top of his head.
Toward the back.
Towards
yes.
the back. And if you were to extend out the shoulder wound, the neck, the path of these pellets, and then the exit wound, I mean, did you actually see an exit wound? Was there?
Yes. It was a blown out exit wound of the skull, and that is how the brain left the skull.
Well, actually, the skull exploded, basically, correct?
Well, the skull, and there was a defect there. I could not reapproximate the skull, so there's a piece of skull missing.
Was there a bevel around that piece of skull?
We don't get beveling when there's shattering of the bone. It's not a typical feature. You could potentially see something that you can say, well, this looks like a little beveling. But in my experience, that's very difficult to assess because there's so much damage and fragmentation of the bone.
And show us the path of that shotgun blast.
So it was going along here and into the left side, I believe, you know, makes most sense, like this, and out the top of the right side of the head.
So if you, and that was, you say, at least 3 feet away?
Yes.
Okay. Your testimony is, and correct me if you need to step over here and correct the angle.
No, I don't like that.
Okay, well, show me what you like.
I like this straight.
Right.
And then, because this is basically not, it doesn't look like it's going upward. It's going straight and then entering around there. So we have two distinct defects, a defect here and a defect there. So I believe the head was at least angled a little bit like that in order for the corresponding continuation of that defect to go in there. But I don't think it's going upward. I think looking at the left shoulder, it looks like it's kind of a, and if it was going upward, we wouldn't have as much in the neck as we did. So I think it's more like straight on.
Well, that would still be coming upward at some angle, right?
No, I think it's more straight. I really, you know.
Well, how does it come out the top of his head?
Well, that's because if his head is like bent like that,
right,
then it's going to go in that direction. Yes.
If it's straight, it's going to go here and then out the top of his head?
Well, it absolutely could. You know, the thing about the neck, heads can be twist and turn, so it's not at all inconsistent with that. It's most reliable that we can look at the shoulder wound and see that it's kind of, you know, it's very difficult to assess the angle from where you're standing, and that's only because the head can bend and twist. And so we can only know where it entered and where it exited, and it's possible the head could have been twisted or turned to correspond.
Would it be more consistent like that to get it out the top of the head?
You know, that could be. However, we have a defect over here. So how would that happen?
Pull your head back and keep it over in that direction. Back and then over that way.
Yeah.
Is that consistent with it coming in here, going this way, and then out?
Yes. I think that the head tilt to the right, as you've just demonstrated,
right,
is perfectly consistent with that. However, because the hole here is here, I think even if his head's to the right, it would still be turned like that. Okay, now that makes sense to me.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Defense Attorney Dick Harpootlian continues his cross-examination of Dr. Reamer by asking about her forensic findings regarding the positioning of the shooter during the murders.
So,
right.
So the shooter would be at least 3 feet away from that right there, right?
Yes.
And would he have it up or would he have it down? Or
it's hard to say, and that's because the head can... We only have one area of an entrance wound here, and it seems to be approximately horizontal, but it's impossible for me to say whether it's the entrance is kind of below him or at his level or potentially above him with Paul leaning over. It's hard to know, and that's because people aren't necessarily standing up straight, and they also the thing about injuries on the head and neck, there's so much twisting and bending possible.
Okay. Now, what you tell us is basically from here back on his skull, and I've looked at your autopsy pictures, all this is gone.
To the right side.
To the right side.
And there were fractures on the left.
Okay.
So we know it's going in a left-right direction.
Dr. Reamer returns to the witness stand and Philip Barber takes his seat.
Okay, let me ask you a couple preparatory questions.
Harpootlian shows Dr. Reamer a red textbook entitled Gunshot Wounds, marked with a number of post-it notes.
Are you familiar with this book?
Yes.
Okay, and it is like a definitive, I'm told most pathologists have read this. And
yeah, it's a highly respected book on gunshot wounds.
Okay. So, if you go to page 228 in this book, is this a copy of what I just showed you out of the book?
Yes.
Can you do this for me? Would you start, show me the first two slides up top along with what's written there. The caption on this is show the sequence of events that occur at the muzzle on the firing of a shotgun. Note the large gas cloud that is partially responsible for the severe nature of the wounds in the contact range. So the first A is the shotgun being fired, correct?
That's what it looks like, yes. Okay. I didn't read the captions.
What now?
There's captions at the bottom.
Are there captions at the bottom?
So,
okay. No, I don't think there are, but I'll show you the book.
Okay. So I imagine that's sequence.
I didn't write the book.
No, that's what. Okay.
So the sequence of a shotgun shell being fired, or the first one is it being fired. The second one, note the large gas cloud that's partially responsible for the severe nature of the wounds on contact. And the third one is the contact range. And then you see on the last one.
I don't see them on my screen.
I'm sorry. Okay, yeah. Go down to the last two. There you go, C and D. You see the, I guess, at the front end would be the pellets and the gas would be preceding the pellets. Is that correct?
No, I don't think that's correct. This is depicting contact range. It specifically says at contact range.
Right.
So pellets are not yet released from the wadding.
Okay, well, we're going to go a little bit further on that in a minute. If this book says contact shotgun wounds of the head are among the most mutilating firearm wounds there are, you would agree with that?
Yes.
Extensive destruction of bone and soft tissue structures with bursting ruptures of the head are the rule rather than the exception.
Right? Yes.
These are the wounds of which an individual said to have had his head, blown his head off, right?
Yes.
In some cases, this is almost literally true. The skull may be largely fragmented and the brain pulpified. Large fragments of the cranial vault and cerebral hemispheres are often ejected from the head. Scalp is extensively lacerated due to two factors, the charge of the shot entering the skull and the gas from combination of the propellant.
Prosecutor Creighton Waters objects on the basis that Dick Harpootlian's question is vague, unclear, or confusing. Judge Clifton Newman asks Mr. Harpootlian to clarify.
One pathologist told me this is the Bible of gun wounds for pathologists. Is that correct?
Well, there's a lot of literature, and this is a highly respected primary source. It's not the only. But what are you asking me about?
Are there two factors which contribute this thing we just talked about, the shattering, perhaps even the ejection of the brain. Are there two factors, the charge of the shot entering the skull and the gas from combustion of the propellant?
Okay. Well, he's actually discussing contact shotgun
wounds. Yes, ma'am.
And that's not what we have here, but we have similar destruction.
Right. Well, we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But this is about a contact wound, I agree.
Okay.
You have not indicated it was a contact wound.
Correct.
We're going to talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
The shot does the shot on a contact wound from a shotgun directly fracture the skull and shreds the brain while at the same time producing pressure waves that increase the severity of these injuries as well as ejecting the brain tissue?
Yes, it frequently happens that way.
Okay. Does the gas entering the closed chamber of the head expand rapidly, adding to the pressure waves, acting on the bony framework of the skull? The only way for the skull to relieve the pressure produced is to shatter.
I would agree with that.
Okay. The shotgun muzzle was 3 to 4 feet away. Would gas have entered the body?
Well, it's still a very destructive wound. in my experience, there is still a huge amount of energy that would enter the head from a shotgun wound, even if it's not contact.
Okay, and perhaps I misstated the question. Would gas, just a yes or no be fine, from 4 feet away enter the body and be destructive?
Yeah. I don't know if it's gas that's causing the destruction, but the there must be some amount of energy that's causing this destruction, because a shotgun wound to the head, no matter what the distance causes, but whether it's due to gas or not, I really can't answer that question. This is not something I've done, not experiments like this, as in the book.
But this is a book you check for reference, correct?
Well, it's a good source, but I don't know whether gas would be responsible for the destruction of the skull from a few feet away. There is destruction of the skull. I don't know if it's attributed specifically to gas or to other factors. So I really can't answer that. And if he says that, that's fine. But I don't know. He's talking about a contact wound. I cannot not necessarily extend that conclusion to what would happen a few feet away, but there is frequently destruction of the head.
I understand that there was massive destruction of the head. I'm just trying to get my arms around definitive work on one of the definitive works indicates that the most instances, the vast majority, that kind of destruction is caused by gas on a contact wound.
Well, this is a mechanism that he's describing based on experimental data. And I'm a forensic pathologist. I've not performed this kind of experimental data, and nor would I extrapolate from his conclusions about a contact gunshot wound to whether the same amount of gas is produced at a distance.
Well, ma'am, and Dr. Reamer, we can walk through this, but these are based not on some experiment, but actually on people that typically shot themselves in the head contact wound with a shotgun. Would that surprise you?
These are depictions of shotguns being fired. Contact shotgun wounds to the head cause massive destruction, and a lot of that is from gas buildup.
Okay, now we're on the same page. So it's your position, there's a lot of energy when it's fired from 3 or 4 feet away, hits the shoulder, hits the neck, comes through, and hits the head, and the head explodes. Correct?
Yes.
And have you had a number of autopsies you've done of victims whose heads have exploded as a result of a shotgun?
Yes.
Okay. And many of those were contact suicide wounds?
Yes.
Okay. Have you ever had one, and we can talk about the details of that, where someone was shot from 3 or 4 feet away, no initial contact with the head? You would agree, no initial contact with the head?
Correct.
It goes through the shoulder, the neck, and then the head explodes. Have you ever had one of those?
Yes, these are very dynamic, and he still actually had a lot of his head there. Sometimes with the shotgun wound, the entire head is basically, you don't really see very much up above like the teeth. So this was, there was obviously horrible destruction of this skull, but his face was intact, and frequently a contact causes fractures of the face. So, I don't see any evidence of contact range discharge on the left side of the neck. So it was not my conclusion. That was not my opinion that this is a contact shotgun wound.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about this. Your position is the energy by a shotgun blast that went through the arm, through the neck, and then up to the brain still had enough energy. Is it the energy caused by, is it pellets going into the brain?
Yes, well, not just pellets, but there's also fracturing of the base of the skull, which is a bone that holds underneath the skull. And that fracturing with sufficient force can actually push the brain out.
And
so it's a variety of mechanisms that could contribute to the destruction and the loss of brain tissue.
It not only fractures the skull. In this case, the brain was brought to you in a separate bag because it ended up laying at his feet. It went up in the air and then plopped down at his feet, correct?
Yes.
Okay. The entire brain?
Most of it, yeah, except for the brain stem.
It exploded out of his head?
Yes.
And the skull was at least almost destroyed around where you say the exit wound is, correct?
Yes.
Now, did you've indicated the state did not show you any crime scene photos, correct?
I really didn't look at them. Yeah. I mean, they might have said, oh, here, you know, this is a picture of the wall, but I didn't look at them. And they were thumbnail size, so this is a couple of weeks before trial.
Defense attorney Harpootlian displays an image on the monitor for Dr. Reamer and the jury.
So, at his shoulder, how big a spread is that? How, I mean, as it comes in, is it 2 inches, 3 inches, 4 inches, 5 inches, that wound?
I didn't measure the spread of the pellets.
I apologize to the jury. This is pretty graphic. How about pull up 109? Okay, so this depicts a very big wound in the shoulder, correct?
Yeah, that's a typical appearing shotgun entrance wound.
Okay, and would you come down here for just a second, please?
Harpootlian again has Dr. Reamer step down from the witness chair and stand beside the jury's video monitor as another image is displayed.
Have you seen that before?
Yes, this is my autopsy photo.
As we look at this photo, we see this is the entrance wound.
Yes.
And then it goes in here, correct?
That's correct.
So, but this is a much larger wound than the next one in line, is it not?
Well, that's okay.
Well, let me ask you this. In terms of understanding a shotgun pattern, as we saw in the photo, starts out basically the size of the shell, right? But if you just answer the question, and then you can explain. Does it start out as the same size as the shell?
Yes.
Okay. And as it goes forward, the pattern expands, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And it continues to expand even after it hits something, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So now please explain to me why this wound, and it looks like it's, I mean, if you use me on my left shoulder, what is the?
Yes. I'd be delighted to tell you why this entrance wound is larger than this one, even though what you said is correct about the spread. And that's because the entrance wound to the left shoulder, it's not straight on, perpendicular. If it was straight on perpendicular, then we would have a smaller hole. But this is going in a tangential manner across. So we're not really looking at a perpendicular, you know, entrance wound that's going to make a round hole. So as it's coursing along the top of the left shoulder, we get more of an oblong hole. In contrast, its continuation into the left side of the cheek is kind of straight on at a 90-degree angle. So that's why that is smaller. So there was nothing about this that was inconsistent with what I would expect from a shotgun wound.
So tell me, so you're saying this shot, this second hole was made in this direction. Is that what you're saying?
I just said that was a continuation of logical sequences. It went through here, it's causing a lot of destruction, and then entered the left side of the neck.
So that big wound is because it's in a different direction than the small one, is your explanation?
At a different angle,
right,
along the surface of the skin.
Okay, and there's no pellets in his face, are there?
There were some pellets that we saw on the x-ray.
But not in his face.
Not in the front of his face.
Right.
With that, we bring to a close this episode of Jury Duty, the trial of Alex Murdoch. Please join us on our next installment as we conclude our review of the testimony of SLED forensic pathologist Dr. Ellen Reamer. Also, check out the Ambie-nominated crime story podcast Night Raid, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you would like to listen to these episodes early and ad-free, head over to our Jury Duty Crime Story Patreon page. You can find more information about this trial on our Jury Duty Crime Story Patreon page or at crimestory.com. Jury Duty is created and produced by Carrie Antholis. It was co-produced, written, and edited by yours truly, Chris Terracone. Music for this episode was provided by Strike Audio. Trial audio is courtesy of Law & Crime Networks. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you will come back for the next episode of Jury Duty.